Welcome, everyone. This is Jeff Anderson from the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and this is a special broadcast that we're doing just for our Bulletproof Defense DVD customers, and we're calling it Shoot to Survive, Tactical Firearm Secrets. And we've done this kind of a broadcast before, several times actually, sometimes in the survival, in the urban survival world, and sometimes in the firearms and home defense. And it's never ceased to amaze me just the amount of knowledge that our members and our customers have that they have to share with everybody else. And we always learn a lot from these broadcasts because this is all about what you have to share. Just one tip that you have, whether it's a training tip, whether it's a combat shooting tip, a home defense tip, a preventative tip, whatever it is, that one tip could actually save someone's life. And with these kind of community broadcasts that we do and your ability to share your tips with everybody else, this gives everyone an opportunity to learn by taking away some tips as well as sharing them with other people. So welcome. I really appreciate you joining us tonight. Now, a few of the logistical stuff that we can talk about right now, you have the ability to join either through the phone or through the webcast tonight. Now, the phone lines, if you are going to be sharing a tip, you can join us by phone. You can share your tip by phone, and it's very simple to do that. If you ever have a, if you want to give a tip over the phone, all you do is press *2 on your handset, and that will put you in queue in the order that people raise their hands, basically. And that, when you press *2 on your handset, it actually puts your hand up on my console, and I will call on you, and I'll unmute your phone, and then you can share your tip with everybody. And if you're not going to be sharing a tip by phone, we just request that, because we only have so many phone lines, request that you actually listen in through webcast over your computer speakers. It's completely free. You can listen in from anywhere in the world over your computer speakers. Just use the webcast function that's here on the broadcast page now, and it'll work out just fine for you. Now, this is a in this special broadcast for the tips, we're also rewarding you for the tips. So not only are you going to get to listen to everybody else's tips, but you're also, for sharing your tips, we're going to put you in the drawing for, we're giving away 3 bulletproof vests this evening, just with you on the call. These will be random people that submitted a tip to us tonight, either through the phone or through the form that you see on the page that we're broadcasting from. And for every tip that you submit on the form, you'll get one entry into the random drawing this evening. If you submit your tip by the phone, by you actually joining us and talking with us and telling everybody what your tip is, then you're actually going to get 2 entries into the random drawing. So I've kind of got this little bin over here, and I've got my assistant just chopping stuff up and putting them into the bin so that we can pull names out. And so 3 times tonight, we're going to be giving away a set of Armor Quick body armor to 3 of the people that are on the call or submitted a tip. We'll do that periodically throughout the evening. It's a $250 value, and it's really, it's just our way of saying thank you for sharing what you have. These tips will also be recorded. You'll be able to get a recording after the event tonight. It'll be available on this same page for a period of about 24 hours. You'll be able to get it. I ask that you just keep it to yourself because the tips will be consolidated as well and shared through a special tips a book that'll come out later. So, and you'll be given credit for anything that you provide on the call as well. Okay. The other thing is that we are going to be, for every tip that we do get in all the way through the end of the call, then we're also going to donate $1 to the Wounded Warrior Project. It's a special project that I firmly believe in as a 10-year military combat veteran myself. The Wounded Warrior Project, I just can't say enough about it and how necessary it is to take care of our heroes that are coming back home with injuries. And so I ask that everybody else think about, in your donations, that you look at the Wounded Warrior Project as well. But we're going to be giving away $1 for every tip submitted all the way through this evening, all the way up until now and throughout this call. Okay? Now, I have asked this special friend of mine to join us tonight to be able to offer some of his tips as well. And I've brought some of my tips to the table, some stuff that I've been holding back on that I'm looking forward to sharing with everybody. But I'm also asked one of my friends to join us as well, who is an expert in firearms as well as urban survival strategies, and that's David Morris. David, are you on the phone with us?
I sure am, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, you are coming in a little bit garbled, but if this is I know you're on your cell phone. You've got some weather out there, so I think as you're talking, it might maybe if you just keep your maybe keep the phone a little bit more away from the mouth, it might not catch up as much static. but we'll check it out. But anyway, everybody, David, if you're not familiar with his training, you need to check it out. In fact, there's a button here on the page. David is a very good friend of mine and one of the go-to people that I look for combat training tips, both with firearms and for urban survival. He's been training everybody from, you know, lifelong spec ops operators and paramedics all the way up to newlyweds and retirees that are waking up to the prepper and firearm and personal defense lifestyle. And you can check out more of his training. In fact, he just came out with a great new book. I highly recommend it. I've put it out to our list on Tactical Firearms Training Secrets that you can check out at tactical-firearms-training-secrets.com, and that will take you over to his website where he has the book available. And there's some really great training secrets in there, especially if you're looking to train on a budget. And there's a lot of, like, special drills that you can do in there that are super cheap but really, really effective at increasing your skills for personal defense with your firearm, okay? All right, so listen, I don't want to waste any more time because I'm looking at right now, at the current, about 25 pages of multiple tips that have been sent in. Now, I'm not going to be able to call on all of these tips that were submitted, and if you did submit a tip on the form, I might not get to it, and I apologize for that. We will still record a lot of these, and the best ones we'll take out, and we'll consolidate as well and give you credit for them. If you already did submit a tip on the form and you want to join us by phone, you can do that as well and share your tip by the phone. Here's the thing I ask for everybody when it comes to your tips. We're not looking for the really basic stuff. We're not looking for the tips that pretty much everybody can figure out, like, hey, go and get a concealed carry permit because you never know when you're going to get robbed out in public. Everybody should have a CCW permit. That's not the stuff that we're looking for. What we're looking for is your really sexy, juicy stuff, okay? What training methods do you use that you don't think other people really know about? What are some combat training tips that you know about, some combat shooting tips, some home defense tips that you think nobody else knows about that you think could possibly help someone save their life in a life-or-death encounter? Okay, so that's the kind of stuff we're looking for. In fact, we're going to start off by sharing a couple of our tips, David and I, so that you get an idea for kind of the quality they're looking for. And while you're thinking about what those tips are, or if you want to go back to the list that you submitted, remember, if you're on the phone, and we're going to give you precedence if you're on the phone. We're going to try and do everything by phone. So if you are on the phone and you're listening, all you have to do is press *2 on your handset, and that will raise your hand on our console, and then I'll go ahead and call on you by name and unmute your phone, and we'll talk, okay? All right, so, David, I hope you don't mind, but I've already had, like, 2 cups of coffee, and I'm raring to go, so I'm going to start with my own tip. Okay, so here's my tip, everybody, because as you may have known, if you have our Home Defense Tactics program, we actually recommend that people have what we call a go belt that's by the bed so that if you do hear something in the night that you can quickly, you don't have to search around for your gun and your keys and your this and your that, that you actually have a belt ready to go. Well, one of the things that people don't often have at the ready is a set of body armor. And so I do recommend Armor Quick has a really good body armor set, and that's why we're giving away 3 sets of it tonight. And it has extra pockets on it for things like your weapon and for magazines and things like that. So consider putting a set of body armor under your bed ready to go. Just keep it there and then have it ready with the other items that you would use if you were ever in a bump-in-the-night situation where you have to grab your gear, get to the safe room, be at the ready without having to search around through drawers and everything else. Most people do not own body armor because they think that it's for military and law enforcement. Wrong. It's for everyday citizens who can take a bullet. And that includes you. And so I highly recommend that you get a set of body armor and keep it as your go armor underneath the bed. Okay? All right. That's my start off tip, David. So what have you got lined up for everybody?
Well, on that same thing, let me ask this first. Am I coming in clearer than I was?
I can make you out. The longer you talk, I guess it kind of comes through a little bit better. So.
That's not good. All right, let me do it and figure out something else if I'm not coming in clear enough. I've got a bump in the night setup similar to what you talk about, and my except it's mainly for being able to go around the house or go outside around the property and check out what caused the bump in the night. And the way I've got it set up is I have two spare magazines in it for my bed gun, a pistol holster in case I'm getting up out of bed. I may not have to put on very many clothes other than what I've got on in bed. And that will allow me to holster my sidearm if I need to. I have flex cuffs in there, knife, and a pouch for a taser. And the reason I am so gung-ho on tasers, one of the reasons, is because if you're in a home invasion situation and you confront your attacker and they comply and you get them proned out on the ground, you've got to figure out how you're going to call the authorities, get them restrained, do whatever. And so I'm not above tasing someone who's on the ground so that I can restrain them and safely call the authorities. Another thing is if you wear glasses or corrective lenses, I'd highly suggest having a set of those either on your bump in the night tack vest or on your go belt so that you can identify attackers.
Great. You know, here's an extra tip I just thought of because when I was in the Army, I was in combat. What really ticked me off was that my glasses kept fogging up, and I was trying to shoot my weapon, but I had to keep like wiping away the sweat because just from the sweat it was fogging up, and I had to keep wiping them away. So the trick that I learned was to actually put a gel toothpaste and wipe it on your lenses. If you're ever you know, if you're sweating everything, it keeps it from fogging up. So that's something. I'm not saying wipe down your lenses before you go to bed every night with your toothpaste, but it definitely is something maybe to consider having in your desk drawer. I mean, in your drawer next to your bed. I don't know how I would use it except unless we know we're going into combat. But that definitely was a. You just brought up glasses, which I do wear glasses, and it's very frustrating to try and wipe away the sweat and the fog. Okay, so we got our. We've got our first caller in here. I'm going to go ahead and call on you. And remember, if you have a tip that you want to share by phone, all you have to do is press *2 on your handset, and that will raise your hand on the console. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute you now. What we have is it's from Clearwater, Florida. Area code is 727. Hello, you're on the call. Last four is 0073 of your phone number.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi.
This is, I'm coming from, St. Pete. I wanted to say that, I think it's a good idea for anybody who's carrying out in the field, whether they're working or not, to get some medical training. One of the things that goes with me everywhere I go is a pack of combat gauze, my quick clot, TK4, little tourniquet, and some H&H compressed gauze. And that's for use either on myself, should I take a round, or to assist somebody, once the fighting ceases. Definitely want to get some medical training before you do this, but, you know, combat gauze is outstanding stuff, and it'll stop a bleed. You can use the tourniquet then just to throw, you know, the prime gauze over it and, you know, with one hand continue to fight.
Yeah, that's a great point. What was your name so I can put you down for the two entries?
It's Jeff, but you, well, I go at Sheld.
From St. Pete, right?
Yep.
Got it. All right, awesome. Thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate it. And, you know, Jeff brings up a really good point because, I mean, there's nothing, I mean, can there be anything more saddening than one of your family members getting shot in your home in a home invasion incident or out on the street and you having to stand by not knowing what to do to stop the bleeding or having the right resources available and to watch them die in front of you? I think that first aid training should be mandatory for people that plan on having a weapon, or even, you know, just it comes in handy just for about everything. But again, you know, as protector of your family, it's not just about having a firearm. It's about saving their life, period. And a lot of times that can mean first aid training as well. So thanks so much. I appreciate that, Jeff. Again, if anybody has a question that they want to share via the phone lines, just press *2 and it'll raise your hand on our end. I don't see any other hands raised right now, so I'm going to go ahead and go actually to some of the ones that were put in here. And I put out a few teasers by email today because there was some really great stuff here. I see a few hands raised right now. I'll call on you in a second. But I wanted to get to a few of these. This one comes from Rich from Valdosta, I hope I pronounced that, Georgia. His tip is practice getting your weapon unloaded, of course, and moving through your home at night so that you can become familiar with furniture placement and other obstacles, as well as shooting lanes and what's behind the shooting lanes, such as bedrooms, neighbors' homes, etc. Now, this is something that a lot of people don't consider. They think that home defense training means going down to the range and putting holes in paper targets. It's not. It's about your home and training in it for a home invasion. And it's not just in the light and knowing where your couch is. Most of these situations some of these situations are likely to happen at night as well. And you need to be able to know your house in the dark as well as you do in the light. And so just moving around the home with your gun makes a big difference, because if you look beyond the gun, that's when you become, when you have a gun in your hand and you're moving through your home, you become much more, it becomes much more noticeable what's beyond the gun. So where you'd be shooting that bullet and what direction it would go and where that bullet would go if you were to pull the trigger. This helps you determine where your best kill zones are within your home, where your safe zones are, and also where your danger areas are, because other family members might be sleeping beyond a certain wall. So it's a great tip that that Rich offered there. So appreciate that one. Okay, I'm going to go to the phone lines again here. And got a caller from, looks like the name is, last name is Pope from Anderson, South Carolina.
I'm here.
Hello. Okay, what's your
name? Hello. One thing I found out, there are places where you're not allowed to have firearms. So what I do is, any place I'm in a situation like this, I always know my lines of sight, know my surroundings, all the, you know, who's in there with me, you know, are they a threat or are they an asset? Also, is there anything around that you could possibly use, like a weapon, like a chair, salt shaker, napkin holder, anything available right there I can use either to distract before I can get close to strike?
Great point. Really good point. And a lot of people are kind of, you know, they're the restaurant. They go to public places and don't really pay attention to their surroundings. I'll go ahead and add something else that I do every time I go to a restaurant. Well, by the way, thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and meet you back out. But great point. Okay. I appreciate you that. Okay. And one thing that I do when I go into a restaurant is determine whether or not the table is bolted down or not. Some places you go to, especially if you're in a booth, the table will be bolted. But you never know when, I mean, tables make a great obstacle, a great escape diversion, that you can tip it over if somebody gets belligerent or something, or if something happens, or even if just a fight breaks out near you, the table makes a great barrier to where that is. Especially if you have a weapon and you have to use it, quickly flipping over a table, it can give you a little bit of cover and concealment so that you'd be able to use it as something of a barrier if you have to shoot from it or escape out another direction. As the last tip just said, you know where your exits are and you can make a hasty exit. So when you get to the restaurant, just go ahead and just kind of tip the table up a little bit, see if it's bolted or not, and you'll know whether you'll be able to use it or not. So great point. I got another guest on the phone. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you. Unfortunately, there's no name or city or state with this one or phone number. So if you raised your hand, go ahead and say your name and where you're calling from, and I'll let you know if that's you. So if you
Hello?
Had already pressed start, yeah, go ahead. Yep.
I did leave my name. We have a walk-through closet off of our bedroom. And every night, going into the bathroom to brush teeth and stuff like that, I deposit on a shelf my cell phone, glasses, and my second tactical flashlight. Our room has a turnkey lock, and we also use one of the bars that goes under the handle to the carpeting. If someone goes to push the door open, all they do is they lift the door in the door jamb. But if they did make it into our bedroom, we're in a spot that's got a good shooting lane. In the morning, I pick these things up because I'm going to carry them with me. So, you know, I have two set of glasses on my dresser. One of them goes to this shelf. So my wife and I are right next to a sign that we put up on the wall that during our NRA course, it said, say this while you're on 911 because it's going to be recorded. So we have our line that we're going to say to the intruder in case he does come in. Now, I'm not venturing out to try to find him. I've got enough turns in my house that someone could effectively really ambush me in my own house. But my wife and I both have gone through the drill, going through the walk-through closet. We've got a bathroom right there, so we've got water. We've got first aid, and we've got the stuff I put on the shelf every night religiously as I'm going in to take care of myself before going to bed.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Everybody needs to look at information on where they would place their safe room in their house if they needed to get to it, and make sure that you do equip it appropriately so that you can use it for a safe room.
Well,
and what was your name again?
John.
John. Okay, John.
And
where were you calling from, John?
Pottstown.
Pottstown, okay.
Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Great tip. And by the way, everybody, if you do have if you have a second tip that you want to, I mean, you can call in as much as you want and raise your hand by pressing *2 to be able to share your tip. So don't be afraid to throw another one in there as well. David, I think it's our turn now. I'll go ahead and go back to you for another tip.
Along the lines of house clearing, one of the things that you want to make sure that you do, it's called an arm check. And basically, it's keeping an arm's length away from any walls. And I understand that in some situations that's not possible because the hallway is not that wide. But to the extent that you can, you want to stay an arm's length away so that you don't catch ricochets off of the wall. You also, as you're approaching a corner or a doorway, if you're going to stop and slice the pie around the doorway or the corner, you want to stay at least an arm's length away from the door so that you don't accidentally stick your firearm out past the door or the corner and somebody on the other side just grabs it or hits your hand and gets your weapon. It's a mistake you can only make once.
Right. Yeah, that kind of goes for everything, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay, cool. Here's one of the tips that I'll throw out to everybody. So here's what I want you to do, and this is a test that you can do. You can do this tonight. So if you have a car that has a remote-activated alarm button on it, the electronic key, the automatic alarm remote activator, what I want you to do is I want you to go to your bedroom, and I want you to test it to see if it will activate your alarm from your bed. Now, some of them have different signal strengths than others, and, you know, some might have your car might be further away than others. So you want to make sure that you test it. And if so, the key should not be in the drawer next to where your front door is. You want to have those with you in your bedroom because if you need – number one, you can go ahead and if you do hear something and you feel somebody – you think somebody's in your house – you can, and if they bypass your like your house alarm, you can hit the remote activator on your car alarm and make that go off, and that's going to most likely freak out the home invader as it is because now that it's not quiet anymore. They're afraid that somebody's going to come to the door, they're going to be found, and they're likely going to hightail it out of the area. The other reason why you want to have those keys with you, though, is if you have to make a mad dash, if you're able to escape from the house, you don't want to be trying to figure out where the keys are. And look, I know you're out there. How many times a week do you go around like, honey, have you seen my keys? And you have no clue where they are. Well, at night, you need to keep them right by your bed, even if you don't have a remote activated alarm, so that you can, if you can get to your car, you can make an escape if that is the best escape for you. So I want you to test that tonight. take your remote activator, go to your bedside, and see if it turns on the alarm. Okay? All right. Let's see. we can go back to, we've got some really good, I mean, I have 24 pages, and they're still coming in from the people that are on right now. Some great stuff coming in. So let me share. This is a training tip that was put in by James from Pooler, Georgia. In fact, James had a lot of tips that he submitted tonight. And he says, and he actually starts off with a story of this, but it brings out a really good training point that I think a lot of people don't really look at with scenario training. He says, when I was in high school, I witnessed a woman pull a pistol on my father because they were having an argument after coming back from a dinner date. But just a sidebar here, that's got to be the worst date in the world. you should never have your date pull a gun on you. It's never ending the right way. He goes on, of course I grew up watching all the action movies, and I always assumed that in a situation that was similar to that, I would jump into action. I did not. I just froze. So the tip is, practice a multitude of scenarios and be as creative as you can. If you have not prepared for a scenario, you're likely to do nothing. He's very right about that. We did some training in Colorado at a firearms course that we put on through our ISCQC organization, and most of it was scenario-based training. And we used guns with blanks, but you can also use airsoft guns for this type of training as well. But you should get together with a couple of buddies who want to do scenario-based training. And most people, when they do scenario-based training, do the whole, like, robber come up to you and stick him up, give me your wallet. Well, those are kind of no-brainer situations where you know what your action is going to be. But I challenge you to let the other two participants in your training drills just dream up whatever they can to include no-shoot scenarios. For example, you might have one person run out. This was one situation that we did where the two fellow trainers came running out into the room, and one guy had a gun and said, stop, and he shot the other guy and then turned the gun on our trainee, who then proceeded to shoot the guy. Well, turned out that guy was trying to pull out his badge at the same time, and it was a police officer. So you have to go, you have to be able to be as creative as possible with not just shoot scenarios, but also no shoot scenarios, so that you can make that mental judgment in the scenario itself, preferably under stress. Okay? So James, thanks for that. Thanks for that tip. Great stuff. And we will go on with some others that we got here. Well, you know what? Hell, we're 30 minutes in. Why not give away some body armor? That's what I like to say. We've got three to give away tonight, so we may as well start off in the first half hour of the broadcast and give away some body armor. So if everybody here is ready, but those that have submitted a tip on the phone, we have put your two entries in, because if you join us and give us your tip by phone, you'll be able to get two entries into the drawing. So all you have to do to join us by phone is press *2 on your handset, which will raise your hand on our end over here. So the first winner for the body armor training, and it has to be a tip, it can't be a question here, chosen randomly is Frank from North Royalton, Ohio. So Frank, welcome and congratulations on winning the first set of body armor tonight. And actually, I mean, I have your tip right here. I'm going to go ahead and use your tip right now as well. So this was a really good one. I don't think anybody – this is a concealed carry tip that I think was really good, and I have never actually tried this, and so this was new to me as well. So here's his tip. Don't hesitate to shoot through your own clothing. Few situations allow you the luxury of having a weapon drawn and at the ready. You're making a deliberated reaction to an antagonist's premeditated action, which means that action is always faster than reaction. Okay, so you might not have the option to get to draw your weapon. As a moral person, you are burdened by ingrained behaviors, considering the safety of others, legal consequences, justifiable force, etc., that will slow your response time. Under the stress, you will be less than perfect. In drawing a concealed weapon, it is not uncommon to tangle a hand or weapon in the concealed garments. Don't waste time that you won't have. Better to have a couple of holes in a shirt or jacket than be attacked with one arm tied behind your back. So I thought this was a great opportunity. I think with your training, with a an airsoft pistol or with an unloaded pistol, to be able to dry fire with you getting to your concealed weapon but not being able to draw it. So if you could just position your body with whatever, however you're carrying a, your weapon concealed, practice drawing it on target from within your clothing, within the holster, however you have it. And a lot of people, I've never thought of that before, actually. So so that's a really great tip that Frank put in. I'm glad we chose your tip, and congratulations on the body armor, Frank. Now, listen, we have two more sets of body armor to give away tonight, and we're going to be staying on the call for a while. So don't be shy. Go ahead. If you have a call that you want to share in by phone, just go ahead and press star 2 on your handset. That'll raise your hand over here. If you have a question that you want to submit, I'm sorry, not a question, but a tip that you want to submit on the form, then go ahead and submit that on the form that's on the page right now, and those will be included in the drawing this evening, okay? What I want to do now is a lot of people turned in questions, and we're trying to focus in on tips, but there was a question that came up that was actually, it was a really good lead into a tip that I saw as well. And Dave, I'm going to get your reaction on this too, because it's probably the most common home defense question that you get. The question comes from Bob from Percival, Virginia. And Bob asks, what to, I'm sorry, nope, this is the wrong one. This was another tip. So here's the question. It's actually from Ron from Marietta, Georgia. He says, I have a 223 semi-auto rifle, an 870 shotgun, and a Glock 21. Which is best to protect my family? So, David, I know that you've heard this question a million times. I've heard this question a million times, and I have, you know, my thoughts on it and the training, and just I always ask this question usually of people that we do. But, you know, so somebody has a carbine rifle, they've got their Glock handgun, and they've got a Remington 870 shotgun. What is the best home defense weapon?
The one that you have in your hands. And
amen.
If you don't have one in your hands, the one that you can deploy the fastest. And all of the concern and talk and debate about over-penetration and going through walls and everything, I heard someone recently say, do you really want to trust your choice of bullets to prevent you from shooting your child through two pieces of sheetrock. And the answer is no. It doesn't matter what caliber of gun I've got, what type of bullet I've got, I don't want my child on the other side of a wall that I'm having to shoot at. So that whole argument just kind of goes out the door. What it comes down to is you're not going to use a firearm unless you are in danger of someone attacking you with deadly force. If someone is attacking you with deadly force, you want to defend yourself as effectively as possible. And that doesn't mean having an internal debate about penetration. It means grabbing whatever you can as quick as you can and deploying it as fast as you can. And
yeah,
so, personally, I have a handgun and a shotgun in our bedroom that are easy to get to. They are also locked in such a way that they would be easy to steal. And my 223s are a little bit more expensive, and they're in the safe unless I'm out shooting them or there's a valid reason to have them out. Not to say that the handgun and shotgun aren't secured, because they definitely are. Just they, it's more likely that they would get stolen if there was a robbery while we weren't home.
Yeah. Well, and another tip that goes along with what you're saying, I've talked about this before, is that a lot of people that are concealed carry, that have a concealed carry weapon, consider it an out of the house weapon. So you strap it on when you're leaving the home and you're going to be out and about, and when you get home, you take it out because it might be uncomfortable or whatever, and you know, you set it down somewhere, or you put it away in your safe, or whatever it might be, because you're now in your home. As David said, I mean, the best home defense weapon is the one that is in your hand, or the one that you can get to the fastest. So home invasions that happen usually in a flurry of chaos, and it catches you off guard. It might be somebody that snuck into your home, or it could be somebody that came to your front door. I mean, as much as we'd like to think we're all super alert when we go to the front door, the fact is that a lot of times we're not. So it's possible that you are ambushed. So don't consider a concealed carry weapon just for outside the home. The one that's going to be closest to you that you can get to isn't even necessarily in the drawer next to the door. It's the one that's on your person that you can get to very, very, very quickly. Okay. So here was the question and a lead in to the tip that I got from somebody else. So the question comes from Bob from Percival, Virginia, and he asks, what should I wear to hide my concealed carry gun during the summer? Bulky coats are hot and conspicuous. And so I thought that was a great thing because, I mean, you know, most people are wearing bags of clothing. They're wearing a coat. They're wearing a shirt outside of their belt. And concealment is certainly, you don't want to be showing your weapon in public. There was a tip that was submitted here by somebody. I'm not sure if it's Kevin or Cavini from Escondido. And the tip that he offered, I thought was a good lead-in from that questioner. That question was a good lead-in to this. And what he says is, a great option for concealed carry is called CellPal. This holster allows you to, basically, I've checked out the CellPal. It goes into a little bit, but it allows you to, it can be worn without a coat, jacket, an untucked shirt, or the obvious fanny pack. There's no need to go buy extra clothing or have to wear extra clothing to hide the fact that you're carrying concealed. It works while standing or sitting and offers a quick, easy draw with a minimum amount of movement. Now, you can check out the CellPal at, I think the website is concealedcomfort.com. And essentially what it is, it's a leather padding in it, and it works with pretty much any handgun. And it attaches to either like a cell phone case. And so it hides on the inside where it hangs down a little bit lower than your belt level. So it's actually like inside your pants so that when you sit down, it's on top of your thigh and it isn't like stuck there jamming itself into your pelvis. The draw for it is at least in video, looks relatively easy to do, and it looks relatively inconspicuous, although, let's face it, when you have a gun in your pants, you know, you've got a bulge there. So either you are falsely advertising what you're packing there, or you obviously have something else in your pocket. So it might not be totally invisible, but there are some people who have said that they don't like it, and some people say that they do like it. I just recommend that people check it out because wearing shorts is and I live in Texas, so it's a little bit harder to carry concealed when it's hot out and you're wearing minimal amount of clothing. So that is one possible
option.
You want to
throw something in there, Jeff?
No, please do.
I've lived in Texas off and on for, I guess, 19 years. And most of those years I've carried. And for the last few years, I've used what's called a stealth holster. And it's a Velcro belt, and it has a pouch for a sidearm and a spare mag. And I wear it on my strong side hip, and it goes inside the waistband, and it's not dependent on a belt because it has its own belt. And what that means is you can wear it with swim trunks, you can wear it with anything, depending on how low you have your sidearm riding. And it's by far the best holster that I've found for everyday comfort and usability.
Okay. And what was that again? What was the name of it?
I believe it's Stealth Holster. There's
okay.
A handful of companies that are making them now. Thunderwear, Stealth Holster. There's a gunny sergeant, I can't remember his name, who made the first one. I think NRA has a private label one that they've released recently. And more people are realizing how usable the design is. And and making their versions of it.
Great. Okay. Let's see, I think Michael from Denver said, yeah, take a look at the Thunderwear and other elastic under the pants holsters. So Thunderwear seems to have taken this on full steam and has some really good options there as well. So, okay, cool. Okay, we're getting a bunch of great tips in via the form that's on the page. I appreciate that, everybody. We are recording all of your stuff for the drawing for tonight, and I appreciate that. Here's a quick tip from Dennis from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Back into your parking space, your garage, so that you can make a fast escape. Works for invasions as well as natural disasters or medical emergencies. Another great point. Same thing for within, you know, spaces, even at the mall, at the shopping center, things like that. Backing in there, make sure that if you have to leave the area because, let's say that somebody picks a fight with you or, you know, or whatever, that you're not trying to back out and run over somebody or whatever. Always back into the parking space wherever you go. So really good point there. We've got a lot of great stuff going in. And by the way, right now we're up to just shy of 300 tips that have been submitted. So just, you know, again, I want to get as many tips in because I want to send as much money over to the Wounded Warrior Project as we possibly can. Again, we're giving away $1 for every tip that's submitted through the end of the broadcast. Okay, so keep them coming in, everybody. Great stuff. Let's see. I'm gonna go ahead and give one of my other tips. Somebody already brought up the Quick Clot earlier. One of the callers did. And Quick Clot, for those of you that aren't familiar what it is, it's basically I don't know what the chemicals are, but it's a bandage that has clotting material in it to help stop massive bleeding that's coming out. So if you, like a bullet wound or something like that, it works really well for stopping the bleeding as a trauma first aid thing. And they make them so small. In fact, even when you look at the package, you'll see that they have a picture of a bike on there, and they use it for camping. The thing is, they're very condensed. They're vacuum packed. They take up very little room, so you can carry some in your car or whatever. But I always keep one in my back pocket. And by keeping it in my back pocket, I know that one is always ready. So Quick Clot was already brought up as a tip. So I had a part B to this tip as well. Because where gauze bandages and field dressings and things don't work very well are on basically the main trunk of your body. Because if you have to move around, especially if you're shot and you have to move to different locations for safety or whatever it might be, trying to put a field dressing on, trying to hold it down and stuff like that or if you're trying to carry somebody that's been shot, the bandage can very easily come away from the body. So this is an old bodyguard trick that was taught in executive protection school when I went there. And basically, it's using a tampon. Now, I'm not going to say that this is like the first responder keep these in their packs, but a tampon is very, very compact cotton or other material that is very, very dense and soak and basically clots up a different area. So it also can be inserted if there is a bullet hole, putting a piece in there. I mean, think about like if you have a bloody nose, sticking the toilet tissue up inside of your nose to be able to stop it from bleeding out until it can clot. So just taking a little bit of the tampon and cutting it off with like your combat knife and putting it in there, you don't want it to be like stick it inside there. You want to have some of it sticking out so that when first responders do show up, that they can remove it and leave as little residue as possible. But they do make relatively, you know, good unorthodox field expedient bullet hole pluggers that you take up very little room. And you can have just on standby if you ever need them. So just another tip there. And okay, let's go to see if we have anybody on the phones with a tip. Nobody on the phones with a tip? Okay. Press *2 if you're on the phone and you've got a great tip to share with us tonight. Every tip is valuable and can possibly save someone's life. And actually here comes everybody now. So very cool. We're gonna go first to, I've got you unmuted now. It looks like Rich from Saddleback Valley, California, or around that area. Rich, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. What's your tip?
Hi, Jeff. You mentioned earlier I'm sorry, I got a kind of a sore throat. You mentioned earlier about a taser, which is an awesome non-lethal weapon, but they are quite expensive. I thought that an inexpensive alternative that all works almost as well is a wasp spray. The cool thing about wasp spray is that it goes about 25 feet. You get the guy in his eyes, and it's very inexpensive. You can buy 4 or 5 or as many as you need, put them around the house in various places. And if you, of course, need to escalate from there, hopefully you are well prepared for that. But until that time of escalation, you can stop a guy in his tracks, and hopefully that will do the job.
Yeah.
Jeff, you mind if I just chime in on
Ahead. Yep.
There's a few things you want to be really careful about with wasp spray. It, on the surface, it's awesome because it is so effective. There's a couple of things you need to be aware of with wasp spray, and especially with buying it with the intent of using it as a defensive weapon. First of all, it's a neurotoxin. And when you deploy an aerosol, be it wasp spray or OC or mace, you're going to get blowback. You're going to get some of it on you. If you're in your house, you're also going to get it on your walls, carpet, furniture, et cetera. And you're going to be breathing it and taking it into your body long term. Pepper spray is about the same price range and much, much better from a safety to yourself standpoint. The other thing is, although it hasn't really been tested as far as I know, it's against federal law to use wasp spray for anything other than its intended purpose. Right on the label. Whether or not you would ever get in trouble for that, it's hard to say. If I didn't have anything else, I would use wasp spray without hesitation. I wouldn't plan on using it, though. There's a big difference in those two. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, this and actually, I'm glad you brought this up, Rich, because there really is no there's really no right answer for wasp spray. Because number one, what I love about it is that it doesn't show premeditated, like I intended to use it for personal defense. It's the same reason why when in fact, I'll throw this out as another tip, but like with a carry knife that you have, having like a box cutter type of a knife or a multi-tool type of a knife that you can get to quickly, or a pink handled knife that when you hold it up in court doesn't look like you were carrying the Black Death of evil combat knife with the intent to kill somebody. The wasp spray goes along the same lines. It's like, well, you know, I was afraid for my life, and I didn't have anything else to use except this handy can of wasp spray that I just happened to have lying around in my bathroom that I was crouched and hiding with. So that's why I do like wasp spray, and it can be very pinpoint as well. You just need to know what the additional parameters are as far as using it as a self-defense weapon. So it's one of those, it's like it has its good points and its bad points, and it's definitely not a bad idea to have it under the sink in your bathroom or in your kitchen or wherever that you can get to it as a as an expedient weapon. So I appreciate, I'm really glad that you brought that one up. So So awesome. Thanks.
So, okay, Jeff, does that mean you're admitting that you carry a pink Hello Kitty knife?
No, I always edit this out so that nobody, the jury, I mean, I'm screwed basically anyway. You are too. I mean, you know, a jury's going to look at us like, you guys teach this stuff. Don't try and play like you weren't expecting somebody to come by and I accidentally blew them away with a Remington 870 shotgun. So, but anyway, and yes, I do have a pink handled knife. Thank you very much. I'm quite secure in my combat folder, handling, manhood. Okay, we've got somebody else on the line here. It might actually be from before, but it's from I think it might be the Jeff from St. Pete again. Are you still on the Are you on the line now, Jeff?
Yeah, I am.
Okay,
I still am.
Another tip?
Yeah, actually, these are it's kind of a couple of tips that are blended together, and basically recommend you know. If you carry a semi-auto versus a revolver, practice, you know, one-hand reloads. So if you take a round in an arm, that you know you can reload your weapon in a fight and continue. And along the same note, Glocks are very popular. I prefer them and. Often, unless you order it with night sights, they come with plastic sights on them. And I've seen somebody try and rack one of those on their boot and just the sights just shatter, come off. So if you got a Glock with plastic sights on it, you know, maybe put metal sights on it so that you'll be able to perform that either on your belt or on your boot or your sole, your shoe or whatever. If you have if you're down to one arm.
Yeah, I think you submitted that through the form, and I actually highlighted that one to bring out because I thought that was a great tip. Cool.
I mean, I don't know that many people practice it or consider it, but you know, it's the reality. If you're exchanging rounds with somebody, there's a possibility that you're gonna take a round and. You know, it's, you really want to, the first time you want to reload your pistol, you know, is not when you're under fire. You want to have that down pretty good, whether it, regardless, weak hand, you know, do both sides. And, if you have a hard time with it, you know, you can just basically stick one hand in your back pocket, but just, it's something that you really ought to do before you're out in the street.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. In fact, we just did a video on that in the ISCQC for one of our weekly videos. Garrett French showed a couple different ways to change out the actually one-handed change outs for your magazine as well, which is another great thing to try and practice. But a lot of people don't consider that they might only have one arm when they're training, so they should be practicing being able to change out magazines as well as racking the slide and clearing jams just with one hand. And I love the tip about the sights too. Cool. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Had another good tip here from, I love this one. In fact, this is something I'm actually incorporating now as well because we're building a house and we're putting in, I've never had a flat screen TV before. We've always just had the gigantic, television sets that are on top of like our big giant table and stuff. And so, actually I've been really getting into, to home entertainment now and trying to figure out what we're going to get for our first flat screen TV and things like that. Well, Floyd from, Dacula or Dacula, I'm not sure which it is, says his tactical tip for home defense. If you have a home invader in your home, turn the TV or the stereo on with the remote control to distract the intruder as you get the drop on them. And I thought, how cool is that? You know, some guy's kind of rifling through your home, and all of a sudden the television goes on, and he's trying to figure out where it got turned on from or trying to find the nearest exit. And we're building a house right now, and we're putting in a closed-circuit television camera system in the house. We've got a safe room that we're building. And one of the things that I've been looking into for home entertainment is in setting up all of our televisions and everything on a network throughout the house that I can attach to my iPod so that I can use it for, you know, you use it for remote control and things like that. So I don't yet know the best app to use, but now you can use your iPhone or your iPad to be able to turn on different stuff that's in the house. So you could actually maybe even get the home invader to think that your home is haunted by turning on multiple televisions around your home and turning the stereo on and maybe the lights on and off. And, you know, that's probably pretty surefire way to get them out of your house if they think that it's haunted. And with the closed circuit television camera system, I could probably just manipulate this all from the safety of my safe room, and probably get them out of the house just by doing that. So that was a great point, Floyd. I appreciate that. Okay, let's see. David, we got some other goodies from you, don't we?
Yeah, I've got some more handy.
Okay.
One of them is, I suggest that everyone carry a flashlight of some sort, and ideally a small tactical flashlight. And if you do, or if you have one by your bedside table, and it doesn't have a loop on it, I really strongly suggest putting a loop of 550 cord on it. And the reason for this is, if you're using a flashlight to identify targets for shooting, and you need to do a reload, what the lanyard allows you to do is, wherever you're at, drop the flashlight, the lanyard will catch around your wrist, you can do your mag change, and only have one thing in your hand at a time. And as soon as you are back in the fight, you can pick up your flashlight again that's hanging from your wrist. And it's much, much easier than trying to hold the flashlight and change the magazine while you're under stress. And that's a fairly simple skill to master when you're sitting on your couch watching TV, or looking in the mirror, going against the clock, or other things. But in a high-stress situation, it's better to stick with gross motor skills.
Cool. Good point. Awesome. Okay, so we'll go on to the next tip here. I like this one, too. I had never thought of this one from the standpoint of concealed carry as well. And this is from Bruce from Milford, Michigan. This was something I put a teaser out of my email today. Bruce's tip is, if your tactical options include throwing your wallet or some cash at a robber as a distraction while you access your firearm or run away, it makes sense to keep your wallet or cash stowed in a pocket on your weak side so you don't tie up your gun hand at a critical time. And I had never thought of this, because most people, if you carry a wallet, don't you keep it in your dominant hand, back pocket? I know I do. Typically I put my wallet in my back right pocket, and I'm right-handed, and that's why it's there. But if you are going to use your wallet as a distraction tool, which is one of the things that people are trained in, doesn't it make sense to do it with your left hand or your non-dominant hand so that you can draw your weapon much more quicker with your drawing hand? So just a quick switch of a butt cheek, and it can make a big difference in just a split second of you being able to get to your gun just a little bit faster and a little bit easier. So I thought that was a really great tip by Bruce. So thanks so much for sharing that, Bruce. By the way, everybody, we're at the 1 hour mark, and we have so many great tips in, so many people that are on the phone lines and are still putting tips in. I want to give as much money away to the Wounded Warrior Project as well. We're going to keep going with this because there were just so many tips, and I want you to really get a lot out of this. We have a really focused mission with the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and this Bulletproof Defense DVD that you purchased is something we wanted to do for a long time, because we felt like it was a missing link in what most people were thinking about in terms of combat shooting. And we put the video out to show the news story for the mother and daughter. I really was expecting a lot of people to respond with, how these people had set themselves up for a legal altercation, and would likely, and I mean that likely, have spent some jail time for their actions had the home invader been shot. Now, if you haven't seen that video, you might not know what I'm talking about, but a lot of people had responded with, yeah, they did absolutely the right thing. And in fact, they did a lot wrong. And so we knew that this DVD was badly needed, because we want you to not only have to be able to defend yourself in your home or out in public and defend those that you protect, but also the worst thing, the next worst thing that can happen is, besides somebody being hurt and a loved one being hurt or killed, is for you to have to go to prison for doing nothing more than protecting somebody that you love. So it's very important that you take into account and take training in the legal shoot, don't shoot type of situation that you can get into to make sure that you're covered when you hit the courtroom. Okay, so really appreciate all the tips that you're pretty, that you're sending in tonight. We've got another person here. It looks like actually Jeff's back on with another tip because he's just full of them. Jeff, you're back on, man. What you got?
Yes, I'm full of them. Peyton's video was just outstanding, and I don't know about a lot of other folks, but I wasn't even comfortable commenting because there was so much wrong with what happened with those two women. That I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like it looks like a disaster waiting to happen the way that was handled. But that's my perception. And not necessarily everybody else's. My tips are kind of, mostly on the CCW side. And I wanted to stress, I don't know how many people carry and with a snap. I carry an open top, and that's because I've had some training in weapon retention. If you're going to be carrying a weapon and the possibility always exists that you're going to be in a hand-to-hand close quarter situation. You better have a good ability to retain your weapon. Because, you know, once somebody has your gun, they have you. That went along also with, practicing point shooting, and this was something that I have a friend who's a Metro Dade officer, and, you know, those guys draw their weapons probably 3 or 4 times a shift. It's pretty active down there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 2 times he's discharged his weapon, basically it was as soon as it came out of his holster in a bent elbow position. I mean, it was very fast. Things evolved very quickly. And, you know, practicing point shooting is a good skill to have. I think it's one of those skills that you really ought to practice, because there's a very good possibility, you know, when you engage, it's going to happen very quickly. It's going to be abrupt, and it's probably going to be fairly close. So that's the other
yeah.
thing I wanted to throw out there.
Yeah, the fact is, I mean, and we've done this in our training as well. In when we did the training in Colorado last year for the ISCQC survival retreat, you know, even people who had been to other courses where it was focused on accuracy with the firearm, when it came down to it, when we ran scenario based training, there wasn't a single person, not a single person in the entire class that ever used their sight in the exchange of fire that we had during the scenario based training. The fact is that you're even, you know, concealed carry, I don't know if I would say most of the time. I don't know. I mean, people will have differing opinions on this, but, you know, you have to look at it from the standpoint of the criminal. They're not going to likely give you a lot of reaction time to be able to draw your weapon. So you bring up, actually, Jeff, you bring up a couple of, really great points there. Number one, you know, so many people say you can't karate chop a bullet, so why learn hand-to-hand combat? Well, it's because you're most likely going to have to fight to get to your weapon in an altercation on the street. You're likely going to be ambushed. You could be attacked from behind. Bad guys do not like to they don't like level playing fields. They're going to make sure that your odds are not good. So if that means just, you know, they want an easy bag. So if that means walking up behind you and slamming you in the head, they're going to do that. So, so you're spot on with that. Have a way to be able to fight to your gun. Have a way to be able to retain your weapons so that it's not taken and used against you. Really great points. Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. It's the only other thing I wanted to add was it's some time ago. My wife and I lived in the Keys, and while going to school down there, I had a class with a girl who was a former Florida Highway Patrol officer, and she had pulled over a car that was moving at a high rate of speed. She went, looked into the car. There was an elderly woman in the passenger seat bleeding, and she immediately figured they needed first aid. And so she turned to go back to her cruiser, and in that time, the guy who was in the car was actually fleeing from a felony he had just committed, and he cracked her in the back of the head, and he then got a hold of her Maglite flashlight, and he beat her to the point that her face had to be pretty much reconstructed. But through that whole thing, she never took her elbow off her sidearm because she believed for sure that if this guy got her gun, she was dead. And I think she was probably right. She's not a trooper anymore, but she's lucky to have gotten out with her life. And just that one set, he turned her back for just a second, and that was all it took. And she's, you know, pretty well trained. So it can, you know, it can happen to anybody. And you really want to, if you're going to carry something on your side, you really want to make sure that you can retain it in close quarters.
Yeah. Yep. And so that's, you know, that's another level of training that people need to be able to, I mean, it's not just about drawing your weapon and shooting it. It's about retaining it as well. And being able to, you know, with an unloaded weapon or with airsoft or whatever, being able to do some sort of hand-to-hand combat where somebody is actually trying to get to your weapon and you're trying to retain it, and look at what options you have for fighting back as well as how to retain your weapon and knowing how to do that. So all good things to add to your training. Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. All right, so let's keep them going. I've just got everything is freaking some really, really great stuff in here. Okay, so let me go to, I had some really good stuff highlighted here. James, some just quick ones. James from Pooler, Georgia says, videotape your draw and try to point out places you are being inefficient, then fix them. You know, this just, this is kind of like what I see as like the football armchair quarterback method. You know, it's so easy to, see what's going on in the field and be yelling and screaming at the football game because they just can't figure it out what they should be doing out there on the field. And, but you have this bird's eye view and you can see so much different than you can on the field. And we always, you know, we're always screaming at the quarterbacks because they don't see the receiver or whatever. It's the same kind of thing. Being able to do your draw and everything is one thing from the standpoint of you actually doing it. But when you look and see what you're doing, you can, through by videotaping yourself, you'll point out other things that you probably aren't even aware that you're actually doing or ways that you can become more efficient. So it can help you point out mistakes as well as ways to be more efficient and in getting to it. Okay? That was a great tip. Quick tip from James. I appreciate that. Richard has a quick one here from Spokane. He says, when you practice, spend some time shooting one-handed and manipulating your firearm with your non-dominant hand. So this is kind of a bonus tip from what we were talking about before with being able to shoot. I think Jeff brought it up, being able to shoot one-handed and practice because you never know when you're going to get shot in your other arm or you're not going to be able to use your other arm for helping yourself out. Well, you never know when your dominant arm is going to be rendered useless as well. So when you're at the range, shoot with your non-dominant hand as well. Practice drawing from a cross draw with your non-dominant hand from your holster. Being able to use your weapon in your non-dominant hand is a critical skill for you to be fully prepared because you never know when you're going to have to use it. Quick tip from Jimbo from Mansfield, and he says, do not under any circumstance use hand-loaded ammo as your self-defense rounds. Use what your police use or at least factory ammo. Hand-loaded ammo is a prosecution point at a trial, and that's true as well because, you know, let's face it, owning a gun, you know, you can be seen as a gun nut, especially if you own multiple guns, or what kind of gun that you own can get you labeled as a gun nut from a prosecuting attorney. Those people that hand load their rounds, especially if you're doing other little, you know, zombie nuclear tricks to your weapons to make, or to your bullets to make them, you know, more of a man stopper. that really turns you into a crackpot in the courtroom and is turned against you, because then they see you, not only have you been looking to shoot somebody, but you've been even devising your own ammunition to be able to take their head off with one round. And so you have to be careful. I mean, if you're using it for the purposes of, I know a lot of people that use hand loading for the purposes of just budgeting. I mean, it's a lot less expensive to be able to use your own rounds for practice when you're hand loading. But you don't want to be able to use, you don't want to use them as your personal defense ammunition, or else it can be used against you, in court. Okay. And you'd have to argue it out. Okay. I've got one of my own tips I'll throw in here. So this one is more of it's a combat shooting tip while out and away from your home. So maybe for concealed carry or whatever. And, that is if you have somebody that is, hiding behind a vehicle. Now, most people think about in terms of if you're shooting at somebody who's hiding behind a car door or even behind an actual vehicle, that you're trying to shoot through the vehicle, or you're trying to wait for them to pop their head up over the vehicle to be able to shoot. Well, what you can do is actually if you shoot at an angle under the car, forget what you learned in geometry class physics class. I didn't pay attention in high school, so I can't tell you which class it was, but the angle that the bullet hits the pavement is not going to be a direct mirror of the angle that it's going to ricochet up on the other side of that point of impact. Actually, bullets, when they hit the pavement at an angle, travel just about parallel to the actual pavement. So if somebody's hiding behind a car, just by shooting slightly in front of the car at the pavement, the bullet can fragment and or will ricochet at parallel to the ground and most likely hit underneath the car. Go past the car at parallel to be able to possibly shoot them if they're sitting down or kneeling down or have, you know, in a prone position, or even if they're standing behind a vehicle, shooting at their location at an angle at the ground. Again, at an angle. Can have the bullet travel parallel and can possibly take out their feet. Again, if they fall down and you're still fighting against the threat, you just keep shooting underneath the car. It'll travel parallel and potentially stop that threat right there by hitting them in another target that would stop them potentially permanently. Okay? Other tips that we got here. We've got somebody with their hand up here from Columbia, South Carolina. The last digits of the phone are 6311. Hello? It might not be Columbia.
Can you hear me? I'm an
Yep, I can hear you. Go ahead.
K, actually.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead. What's your tip?
Oh, you can hear me. Oh, okay. This is Bob Butler, Tagi K, South Carolina.
Okay, Bob.
Basically, I guess this goes across the line with martial arts as well as whatever weapon you're going to use is spatial awareness. Like if you have a rifle, if you're training well, you know what distance that's pretty good at. You know, okay, I can hit within a hand spread at 100 yards with that, no problem. Or if I have a shotgun, I know, okay, if double odd, I'm pretty effective at 30 yards or so. With slugs, I can go out to 50 from standing. And, you know, wherever your confidence is, and as they get closer, let's say if you've got somebody in your house, maybe your handgun would be good enough if you got that. You should be able to hit anything with that. And if, with those, say if you're out in the parking lot, if you're out in public, you better be aware of your spatial arrangements there, because you're talking about retention and so forth. So, backhands, elbows, all those kind of things are effective, probably at the gun retention range. So, I don't know, spatial awareness seems to be, the key all the time. All your training should be focused on what's the, effective distance for each of the weapons you've got. And you need weapons from 0 to out to whatever yards you want to reach out to. If you have a property where it's the lots of open lanes of fire. You want to be able to control that all the way into someone's breaking into your house. Whatever weapon you plan to use, you need to be pretty familiar with your spatial relationship with a target and use a proper weapon, especially when it's coming in close. So that's
a great point because there's so many different spaces that can
Well, it's situational awareness is what it is, and you're matching your weapons with whatever the whatever's going on.
Right, right. And there are so many different distances
you
might have to teach somebody in. You know, in your home,
any of these weapons you're creating with, even the martial arts, you really want to know what the effective distance is. You know, you're not sparring and trading punches or anything like that. It was the action trumps reaction. You got to know what's effective, and be able to use it instantly.
Right, right.
And
great point.
Especially like that Zimmerman case. That Zimmerman case. Here's a guy that just had no spatial awareness at all. He got clocked, right? And I know of countless cases where cops get clocked because they let people get too close to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bad thing. You gotta know, you gotta have that spatial awareness all the time.
Right.
And
got
especially
it.
Be aware of what the other guy can do. Yeah.
Exactly. Thanks, Bob. And Bob's right because, I mean, there's so many, even within your home, there's different spaces. You know, it's different at the end of your hallway or on the other side of the house than it is right around the corner or in a doorway. So, you know, understanding the limits of your weapon, and how the space is within your home and engaging within your home, even if it's with airsoft and you have targets around your home that are there. And so this is another great drill that you can do is to set up, silhouette targets of bad guys throughout your home or have somebody else do it where you don't know. So if you're in a clearing situation, and we don't recommend, I mean, listen, if you've got a bump in the night, don't recommend you start going around and sneaking around and trying to find the bad guy. That's never really a good idea. You know, hunker down in a safe room or something, call the police, let them show up, and that's your best bet rather than trying to roam around and find the guys. But there are some cases where maybe you have to get to a loved one or something like that. So understanding the spatial distance of where you're going to shoot from by having, you know, around your home, targets at the end of the hallway or within a room that you open the door up to, and practice firing an airsoft gun at these targets gives you the spatial distancing of being able to fire, reaction time, being able to acquire your target very quickly and being able to shoot, potentially even having some targets that have like a hostage situation where somebody's, you know, an image of a bad guy holding on to a hostage. Is another really good one to have, but it's a great home defense tool for if you have to clear your home for you to be able to use. Okay.
You want to add in two things on that, Jeff?
Please do.
One of them is the skill of clearing a house with a firearm is great. Once you get over the novelty of that and realize that there's a really good chance that you can get popped by someone hiding or getting lucky. An advanced, or actually it's more of a natural progression, is that you start figuring out where the best ambush points are in your house and where the best choke points are in your house. And what you end up with is you figure out one or two places where you can go and control the entire house. And you don't have to go to the bad guy. Once you're in your point of control and dominance, all you have to do is wait. If they decide to go through the choke point, you get to decide whether or not they're still posing a lethal threat to you. If they decide to run, that's great. But if you can figure out the places in your house where you can stay stationary and force your attacker to move, you're going to be in a much, much better position. The second thing is on range, I very strongly suggest that anyone who has the opportunity, and pretty much everyone in the United States will have the opportunity, is shoot your pistols, shoot your handguns at 100-yard range, and shoot them at 100-yard targets, and see what kind of performance you can get out of them. With very little practice, you can easily be hitting an 8-inch target at 100 yards with just an ordinary off-the-shelf handgun. And if you think about correcting for elevation because of bullet drop, you're really only looking at about 5 to 8 inches of drop, depending on the caliber and the length of the barrel and how it's sighted and everything. But it's really not that big of a drop. So just a couple things to keep in mind.
Cool. Awesome. We still have keep the tips coming in, everybody. You're turning in some really, really good ones here. And again, I'm looking to send as much money to the Wounded Warrior Project as possible. I just saw one here that I thought was really cool. Here it was. This one was interesting. Because a lot of people know that a dog can be a valuable home defense weapon in a way. So either for alert or for protection. I mean, some, like a bigger dog might be a good protective tool. You have dogs that are very protective and may, you know, try to attack a home invader and at least keep them, you know, busy while you get to a safe room or get to your weapon. Other smaller dogs are very, very yappy, and while you feel like punting them out the door sometimes. We have a lot of these little yappy dogs in my neighborhood, and I swear, just to me, they're like they're target practice for my Ruger. But not really. I was only joking with that. Dennis from Jacksonville, Florida says, if you have a dog that is your go-to dog, go to the door and bark kind of I'm not sure what you meant by this. Go to the door and bark kind of dog. He's the go to the door and bark kind of a dog. Learn the different kinds of barks that they make. Stranger bark isn't the same as another dog bark or dang cat get off my lawn bark. And that's important that you understand, because I mean, you might have a dog that barks in the middle of the night and you need to know the difference between, okay, there's somebody creeping around outside, or hey, I see a skunk and I want to go get it sort of a bark. So that's one thing. The other thing that if you are considering a dog for the sole purpose, especially if you're like a woman, I know a lot of women want to have a dog for protection at home. If you're looking for a dog specifically for home defense, or somebody that will protect you at your home and be very, very personally protective, but not necessarily the kind that you would have like around your kids or anything like that, if that's the situation, one thing you can do to pick out the dog is to go down to the local shelter. And, you know, while most people go there and they're looking for the cute, cuddly little, like, guy that's wagging his tail and everything, what you're looking for, actually, if you're, again, this is for personal protection, is the dog that is potentially even mean, that gives you that look like, don't go near me, and could potentially be even growling at you. And just bring some hot dogs down with you. And when you find a dog that looks very, like, you know, don't screw with me sort of look in his eye or is potentially growling, give him a hot dog and see what their reaction is from there. If they go from growling at you to wagging their tail or taking to you, then, you know, explore that dog potentially being your dog. What those types of dogs, their mentality is, they're the kind that, like, don't bite the hand that feeds them, but will bite every other hand. So again, this is a personal decision. It's based upon your environment and everything. But if you're not concerned about that dog attacking other people, like you don't have other people in your home or anything like that, then that is like they will devour any intruder that comes to your home. So you want to see how they are around other people as well that you bring with you when you're checking out the dog, to see if they're open to other people that they see that you, the hand that feeds them, sees as not a threat or as friendly. They can be very protective. They can still end up being good family dogs if it's your family, but be very, very effective as a personal defense weapon at home. Okay, some other great tips coming in. Floyd, this was a really good one. In fact, I used this one actually in our home. This is Floyd from, again, I'm screwing up his, the name of the town. It's Dacula or Dacula. Says, Jeff, here's my defense tip. If your home has an intercom system, your spouse can issue a warning over the intercom as you get in position to get the drop on the intruder or intruders. The spouse can even tell them they are under gunpoint and police are on their way and to lay down their weapons and get down on the floor. At the very least, this will distract them as they will look toward the voice, and you then have a moment to assess if shooting is necessary. Most homes don't have an intercom system, but what we do have in our home is we have handheld two-way radios, and we keep a base in two places. So we have a base in the kitchen, and we have a base in our walk-in closet, which is our safe room in our house as well, and where we keep our gun safe and everything. So, you know, not everybody has CCTV cameras in their home as well. I get that, although it's becoming really inexpensively to have a wireless system in your home now. But we keep the two-way radios in the base and on all the time. And so it allows us to use an intercom throughout the house. So it's an inexpensive intercom that you can use. When the kids go out onto our property, you know, they go out into the ravine, and we've got some land and everything. They go out there. They take a two-way radio with them. We can call them back in for dinner. They can call for help if they see a rattlesnake or something like that. Like, we keep it for protection purposes. But having it in the house, I can also, from my bedroom, actually use the intercom to tell a home invader, we've called the police, they're on their way, leave now, or, you know, I'm not saying, like, keep them there at your home and they're under gunpoint. That is one option. But my goal is just to keep my family safe. And we have everything recorded on camera as well to hopefully spot an intruder. But we use a home two-way radio system to be able to use as the intercom, like Floyd uses here. But great point from Floyd. Let's see if we've got anybody else on the phone. Yes, we do. Okay, so it doesn't show your city or state, but if you just raised your hand and you're on the phone, if you give your first name and where you're calling in from.
Hi, this is John from Pottstown again.
Hi, John. Okay.
Along with what you're saying, if a person can't afford that, a lot of people have had a baby monitor.
And
this is something we're planning on doing, having one, setting up it in our family room. So if someone does come in, they're very sensitive. You can hear people breathing on those things, and we'll be able to hear them. So it's just a thought that a lot of people have had these things, and they, you know, I went out and bought the two-way radio because I have an RV. My wife helps me back up. She can give me the information I need. We just thought that would be great because it plugs into electricity. You're not using batteries, and it's very sensitive to sound. And our cat's in the basement, so they don't have to worry about her. But anything else making noise in the house, they would alert us rather quickly because my wife's a light sleeper.
Yeah, that's a great point. And actually, I hadn't thought of that one. But baby monitors are very, very sensitive. I know we had one when our son was a baby. And so, so having one kind of, so you're saying, like, have it kind of stationed in, like, within your house and keeping it on, like, in your bedroom so that you can hear something that goes on in the house, much, you know, giving you a better, I guess, giving you an earlier warning to be able to react to it.
My daughter just bought one, and it even has vision capability. So she can watch her child in the bedroom, and she can say, okay, I told you to lay down and fall asleep. You're not. You're up playing. And she didn't have to move from where she was at to say that. So in effect, that would work by being able to announce the person, I see you in my house, and we've called the police.
Right. Good point. Excellent point. Well, thanks for sharing that. That's a great point. Okay. All right. I think it's time to give away another a set of body armor. We've got two left. I've got everybody's name down here, and even everybody that is still turning in some additional tips and everything. I appreciate keeping coming in. We're printing them out as soon as they come in and putting them in the pile that we have here. So I'm going to go ahead and choose the second set of body armor to give away right now. And I'm reaching my hand in. And the winner is James. James from Pooler, Georgia. James from Pooler, Georgia, which actually doesn't surprise me because I think he probably put in about 60 different tips, all of them really, really good. And I think we might have even grabbed a couple of his tonight too. But again, for every tip that you put in, that gets you into the running for each one of those gives you an opportunity to win the body armor. So James, congratulations and thanks for all the tips that you submitted. You've got the second set of body armor. We have one more set to give away. We're going to give away at the very end of the call tonight. So there's still a chance for you to win it. Go ahead and please, if you submit it by the phone, you get two entries. If you submit it on the, via the form that's on the page for the live broadcast here, or if you submitted it before, you get one entry into the drawing and we'll draw the last one at the very end of the evening. For Renee, right now, we'll go back into the tips. And let's see. This is a training tip that I thought was really good from FAV. So I'm not sure what it is, from Brownsville. And this is a training trick for trigger pull and trying to get away from jerking the trigger. And he says what you can use is a blue racquetball. Wrap your hand around the blue racquetball and squeeze slowly with your trigger finger. What this does, it will give your trigger finger a muscle memory, and you'll get used to squeezing instead of jerking, and it will come more naturally when out shooting. So there's a simple training aid, probably costs about 50 cents down at the local department store, that will help you with trigger squeeze muscle memory. Okay? Wow, some really great stuff here. Let's see. So this one is from R. Scholl from Menominee Falls, and he says, if you're going into an uncertain situation with an intruder in your house and you're not wearing body armor, actually I recommend even if you are wearing body armor, stay low and try to minimize the amount of body exposure you present while you locate your target or targets. Your enemy intruder will not be expecting you to come in low. He's going to figure you will probably be standing up when you approach, so his eyes will be higher. The extra few seconds it takes for him to spot you down low gives you the tactical advantage. One other thing that kind of goes along with what he submitted is that most people, when they're shooting under stress and they're jerking the trigger, tend to shoot high and to the right, or if they're dominant hand, or high and to the left if they're left dominant hand. So they tend to shoot higher anyway. So ducking down low, in addition to maybe giving you a lower profile and you're not acquired as easily, you're not expected to be down low, also will potentially give you a little bit better clearance for when they're, you know, if somebody is shooting at you and you're able to take advantage of their natural trigger pull, which would pull it up into the dominant side of their shooting. Okay. Okay. Man, so many good tips. I'm just going through all these things, and it's like it's freaking amazing. I don't know. David, you got another one? Do we blow? You've got
another
one.
Yeah, actually, one on that has to do with body armor. The body armor you're giving away tonight fits in with this perfectly. And body armor, of course, is a trade-off. If you wanted perfect protection, you'd get an M1A. Not an M1A, M1 Abrams. But what you want with body armor is portability and maneuverability and protection, and it's a balancing act. And a lot of people want one that's as long as their torso. And what happens is every time you sit down with full-size body armor on, that body armor is going to pop up and hit you either in the neck or the chin. And it's not real comfy. And so what I've done is I wear body armor that's smaller than what I'm supposed to wear. And what that does is it gives me a little bit of a gap between my belt and the bottom of the body armor so that when I sit down, it's not popping me in the chin. And I give up a little bit of protection for a lot of comfort, and what that ends up meaning is I wear it more because it's more comfortable. And along the same lines, when you're looking at carriers, I suggest people get an elastic cummerbund and that straps down with Velcro. And the reason for that is, especially with a body armor that's in a tactical vest, anytime you run, if it bounces up and down, it's basically acting like a pile driver on your spine. And so you don't want it to move any more than possible. And the elastic cummerbund will keep it from bouncing up and down. And again, not bouncing up and down means more comfortable. More comfortable means you're more likely to wear it when you need it. And one last thing on that is if you normally carry your sidearm on your strong side hip, you want to make sure that both your body armor and the carrier that you're looking at will work with a strong side holster. And because a lot of times the different body armor or carriers will cause you to get hung up as you're drawing your firearm. And it might mean getting a different holster that kicks your pistol out further. It might mean using one that drops down a little bit, or it might mean finding body armor or a carrier that has a different cut.
Yeah, great. I mean, people, you've got to be able to, like, find what's comfortable for you. I mean, don't be afraid to use money-back guarantees and turning stuff in. I mean, when stuff doesn't work for you, you've got to find what allows you to be functional, comfortable, access things quickly. It has to do the job. So, you know, don't just go onto a forum and listen to what somebody says is the best or the worst type of you know, either body armor or concealed carry holster or whatever it is. You've got to find something that's going to work for you in the situations that you're going to use it in, and use it in as many situations, especially in training and like scenario-based training, as possible, so that you can get a real feel for what you're using. I mean, so many times people talk about, like, what's the best gun, what's the best ammunition, what's the best holster, and we take other people's word for it, and really the best thing is what is going to work for you. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to actually test it and use it. And don't be afraid to turn stuff in and get your money back if it's not what you're looking for. Okay. So quick tips here. Barb from Kenosha says, have fire extinguishers in several areas around your house that can be used as clubs and can be discharged at attackers to slow them down so you can escape or get to your safe room. Really, really good point. And besides, let's face it, you can have a fire anywhere in your house. So do you have a fire extinguisher near your bed at night? So if there is a fire, that you don't have to try and run down to that little tiny one you stuck obligatory in your kitchen for any sort of a stove fire that you have. You should have a fire extinguisher in your bedroom for at night and in several areas within the home so that you can reach it at a moment's notice, whether for self-protection, a distraction, or for putting out a fire. So great point, Barb. Here's an interesting one I'd never heard before. David, I might ask for your feedback on this to see if I understand this correctly. But Leonard from West Palm Beach, Florida, just submitted via the form on the page, put a piece of reflective tape on your handgun right before your front sight. It allows easier sight acquisition in a point-and-shoot situation. So as I see that, I mean, that wouldn't be maybe like, I guess even in a low light, it could reflect some, whether natural light or something from outside or whatever. But that, I've never heard of that before. Any feedback on that, David?
I haven't heard of it either. I would think that you might end up with a ghost image and then having to decide which image is truly your front sight. But I'm not sure.
I think it means
it'd be great.
I think he means putting it around, like, around the barrel, like, not, like, as a dot or anything like that, but just, like, especially in a low light, you know, where the sights, you're not going to really be using the sights all that much anyway, or it's very hard at night to use the sights. But it might give you a better, you know, it gives you a larger, I guess, a reflective sight acquisition point. Leonard, if you're on the phone, I welcome you to press star 2 and be able to dig into that a little bit further. If not, don't worry about it. I think I understand what you're saying, and it's an interesting, it is an interesting way to get an easier sight acquisition, especially in a point and shoot situation when you're not going to be using your sights or, you know, your fancy glow in the dark sights or anything. So that's cool.
Yeah, a very quick and inexpensive way to have twice as big of a front sight.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff's back on the line. Jeff, I'm just going to make you one of the hosts tonight, and because you've got so much cool stuff. So I appreciate you calling back in. So what's the what's the next tip?
I just wanted to comment on the reflective tape. I believe, and somebody may be able to correct me, Garrett, if he's around or whoever, but I've seen Israeli infantry, and they'll have specific places where there's tape on their carbines, and I think that's for close quarter use so they can identify each other as they go about their work. Personally, I'm not a big fan of things that, you know, reflect light or glow in the dark other than sights, and, you know, obviously with the DVD, you know, nobody ever even look down their sights in the encounters that I witnessed there. So
right.
And I don't know if anybody has got a background, but I believe I've seen the Israelis do that for close quarter stuff.
Hmm. Okay. All right, cool.
Yep.
Thank you, sir. All right. Here was a tip that was submitted from Matt from Blairsville, which is really super important to take into account. And he says, if you find yourself in a combat situation with a semi-automatic pistol that is not your own, always, and I'm gonna interject here a little bit, and that includes if you're able to, like, disarm a weapon from a criminal. So whether you were able to subdue them, whether they dropped the weapon, whether you're able to pull off of some Krav Maga, disarm on a holdup or in a hostage situation, when you find that their weapon is now in your hands and you're able to use it, a lot of people will just point it at them and you know, get them down on the ground or whatever, just plan on using the weapon that they just had in their hand. However, as Matt points out here, always rack the slide immediately after taking control of the firearm in case the chamber did not have a round in it. This is very important because somebody might not have they might not have racked the slide themselves going into a situation. They might not think that they need to use, like, a home invader or whatever. They might not think that they actually have to use the weapon. Some are so stupid as to think that, well, it wasn't a loaded weapon because I didn't have a round in the chamber. It could be somebody that didn't even have money for the bullets and there's nothing in it. And by you racking the slide, if no bullet comes out, you are, you know, I would say rack it again to see if another bullet comes out, because if nothing came out, if nothing was ejected the second time, that means you probably are holding an unloaded weapon, and they probably know that, and if you don't know that, then they're probably going to ambush you because they're not afraid of getting shot with it. But it's very important that you when you do take control of the weapon, that you rack the slide to be able to chamber round. If one flies out, then you know you've probably got another round in there, and it's okay to use as a loaded weapon to be able to take control of them. Good stuff. Okay. Man, I'm going through and see what I've highlighted here that we've got left here. Okay, here was a good training technique, and I've used this one as well. I thought this was really good from Chuck from Thousand Oaks. And he says that to improve my trigger control, try this. Use a small colored circle. The office supply colored dots work great. a cross or an X. Balance a penny if you can find such a thing. balance a penny on the end of your gun behind the front sight. Two objectives with this. After you squeeze off a shot, do not move your gun and look to see if you are still dead centered on where you are aiming. Two, try to ensure that your trigger squeeze or push is gentle enough that the penny is still where you balanced it. I've used this with my sons to be able to teach them trigger control, mostly in like on our rifles, but I'll teach them, you know, proper trigger squeeze by balancing a penny. This was something we did in the military. Everybody that's in the military knows, you know, on the end of on your rifle, place a penny on there and work on trigger squeeze to be able to keep the sights on there. Of course, this is something more along the lines of an aim sight trigger squeeze scenario instead of rather a point shoot. But it does help with getting down your stability when you are pulling the trigger in a combat situation. Again, you know, in a combat situation, are you going to be able to balance pennies on the end of your weapon? No. But the whole point is to be able to train yourself under very challenging situations so that under the stress of combat, you just have a little bit more fudge room in there to be able to just rely on muscle memory and the things that you've trained yourself on so that you're better prepared during an actual firefight. Okay? Good stuff. Okay. I've got I'm going to go to one of mine. I've got another one here, and this one has to do with the ammunition, because a lot of people wonder, well, like, what's the best personal defense ammunition? What's the best home defense ammunition? It's a very, very common question that's out there. And something that I've started doing recently, I don't have my concealed carry permit. I just moved to Texas. It is on my as soon as possible to-do list to get my CCW. David always makes fun of me because he always wonders if I'm still packing my machete or whether I got my CCW license yet. Really appreciate
now
that.
Now I know you've got your same time.
No, yeah, I'm still packing a machete, by the way. It is not pink. Thank you very much. When I've been looking at ammunition for exterior carry, there's something that law enforcement has been using a lot of recently are called bonded bullets. And bonded bullets are something I'm strongly considering as my out-of-the-house concealed carry ammunition. And most self-defense ammunition has a lead core and it has a jacket around it. But what happens is that when that bullet hits something, whether it's a person or when it hits whatever it hits, that jacket most often separates away from that lead core. And bonded bullets prevent that separation. So it keeps the jacket and the lead core together better. Now this does a few different things. Number one, it retains 100% of the weight of the bullet. It expands a little bit. You have a little bit more penetration because in theory or in gelatin tests, it delays the expansion of the bullet once it hits something. But here's something really important about it. Because it doesn't separate, it penetrates vehicles better and it penetrates glass better, rather than separation. So a lot of law enforcement have looked at using this as their carry ammo, because if they do have to shoot into through glass, whether it's their own glass or whether it is into a vehicle, whether it's into a vehicle body, then it has to go through a car door, that maintaining 100% of the weight of the bullet, having more power behind it, delayed expansion of the bullet allows better penetration and things like this. Now, it doesn't change a lot of what happens with the stopping power of it, other than the delayed expansion can make it go deeper into the body to be able to hit vital organs and expand closer to vital organs than on the outside. But the important part of it is that if you are in an environment outside the home, that it is quite possible that you might be shooting from your vehicle or into a vehicle or around vehicles or something where somebody is hiding, and you'll be able to maintain more of the bullet and have less separation. Okay, so consider, the tip is consider using bonded bullets in your concealed carry weapon outside the home. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Any more phone tips coming in? Don't see anything in there. Go to the Q&A. I think we're getting near the end here. And listen, even if we have look, so many tips were brought in, and I'm sorry I can't get to them all. There were so many amazing ones in here, and we are going to compile all of these, and they are going to be collected into a special program, and you will have access to that program as one of the Bulletproof Defense customers. So let's see. Use, by the way, Leonard put in a little bit of a clarification. He said, I use a 1-inch piece of reflective car tape right behind the sight. Makes it easier to aim when not taking the eyes off of, makes it easier to aim while not taking your eyes off the subject. So that clarifies a little better about, where to put that. Paul has a really good point here for, Paul from Swatara. I probably screwed that up as well. But here's a tip when you're in your car and trouble arises, lock the doors and honk out SOS, which is dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, dot, dot. Or if you're thinking of it audibly, it's three fast beeps and then three long honks and then three more beeps. If you cannot leave the area, it may attract helpful persons. What I like about that is not just somebody laying on the horn, which somebody might consider, well, this is, you know, just somebody who's mad at somebody or whatever, which may possibly draw attention. But if you are honking the SOS, then that is going to bring, I mean, that's pretty much universal. A lot of people know what that is. But because it is a unique pattern, it is going to draw attention to bring people to you. That's an incredible tip, Paul. Really appreciate that one. Andrew from Halewa, Hawaii says wireless TV monitors can be hacked from a laptop right outside your house and give someone a visual into your home and make sure it will be encrypted. Not sure how likely that would be, but I mean, you could have it on your actual laptop, or on your portable device now. They make them where you can actually access them by portable device, so you can move throughout the home if you need to, or you can see where different areas of the CCTV are, especially if you have somebody that's outside your home. You need to travel around your home to try to get to something, whether it's get to a loved one who's on the other side of a house. You can still maintain viewing of your exterior cameras if you have them while moving through your home so that you don't have to like be in one place and monitor the CCTV cameras from your central point.
Let me chime in on that, Jeff. That's actually very, very easy to do. And we did it so that we could monitor our baby monitors from the computer in addition to the handhelds. And unless the monitor setup that you've got is doing frequency hopping, it's pretty much guaranteed that you can sniff that signal and watch it on your screen.
Oh, so you're saying that it is easier to hack into this type of stuff?
It's not even hacking. It's just the signals are out there and they're open and they're unencrypted, and anyone who has an antenna and can suck in the 900 megahertz signal can monitor the baby monitor.
Got it. Okay. All right. Thanks for chiming in on that. This is from Jody. From Los Angeles. Jody, I think you've been with the ISCQPC for quite a while. Your name sounds really, really familiar. The tip is learn the difference between cover and concealment and find those places in your home. This is huge because cover and concealment are not the same thing. Cover is going to give you a hiding place. I'm sorry. Concealment is going to give you a hiding place. Cover is going to give you a barrier potentially to a weapon. So they're not the same thing, and understanding where those areas are in your home is really, really big, because hiding behind a cheap chair that you have or your sofa, you know, a bullet is going to penetrate that. So it does give you concealment. It might hide you, but if somebody shoots through that couch, they're most likely going to be able to hit you. However, if you have a place in your home that it can be used for cover, and that could be a series of two walls. So it could be around a corner where if somebody has to shoot through, it has to go through two walls. So you have a better chance of studs hitting it or being able to deflect the round somewhere other than where they're pointing at. Gives you a little bit better cover. It could be a heavy table that you have that you can flip over and use as better cover. But whatever it is, you need to walk around your home and know where those are. So you can probably pretty much right now look and see where you would be able to hide. But what could you get behind that would give you better cover in your home to be able to defend in an ambush or a home invasion or something like that? So good point. And let's see if we've got another one here. Any more on the phone? I mean, we're gonna tie things up here, and I'm gonna take everything else that's out there before we give away our last set of body armor. Want to give anyone else, if you have something on the phone, go ahead and give a star two. Otherwise, I'm gonna go to the Q&A, the forms that were submitted. Trying to find something that was submitted here while we were on, somebody that's on live. No, David, we went through all of yours, didn't we?
No, I've got actually another pretty cool one that I could throw in. So Harbor Freight and Radio Shack and a lot of places sell little stick-on door and window alarms. And what they are is two little plastic boxes. And one plastic box is just a magnet, and that's what tells the other part whether the door or window is open or closed. The other part has a very loud buzzer in it. It has a battery, and it has a switch. So throw away the magnet part of it and keep the other part of it in your tack vest or by your bedside table. And you've got a switch-on distraction device that you can roll or throw if you need to draw someone's attention away from you. And those work in all sorts of situations, both in a tactical situation and in a – they also work great as a distress signal. If you happen to be trapped in your house and EMS is outside, you turn one of those on, that's a good place for them to come look.
Yeah, great point. Awesome. Let's see. I want to do one more before we give away the last set of body armor. I'm just looking to see what I've got here from the stuff that was submitted. Let's see. I saw one here before about grips on the weapon. I was trying to remember where it was from. Well, here's one from Russell from Marengo. Remember, even though there might be a wall or door between you and your assailant, lightweight doors and drywall are not bullet stoppers. Use this to your advantage, although it may not be first choice. It is not always a common thought. So here's something. I mean, consider using not hollow doors in your home, but actual solid core doors. We use them in the home that we're building on purpose, and the purpose of that was to be able to provide more stopping power for bullets that are trying to get through. However, we have a fatal tunnel outside of our safe room that we use that is just outside of our bedroom door. Is we can see that with cameras. And when that's locked, if somebody is there, it is on the other side of our safe room, which is also doubles as our walk-in closet. Now, the area right next to where that door is sheetrock. And I can see that person there. And on the inside of our safe room is a gun safe, which the door to the gun safe provides me the it provides us the basically the armor that we need to be able to stay safe from any bullet rounds. However, putting a Remington 870 shotgun up to the side of that wall when somebody has not heeded the warning from my monitor and the cops are on their way and every other thing that we put in place, like, you know, you probably should leave my house right now. If they are still trying to get there, then it's not a, you know, it's a pretty simple shot through the sheetrock right to, we know right where that door is. Now, legally, you've got to be able to show that, I mean, the threat was immediate and things like that. This is a last-minute thing. Like, I mean, this is under extreme circumstances because I would not want to be defending myself in court saying, yeah, I was hidden in a room and I could see the guy and I shot him dead right in front of the door and he was not, he did not have a gun drawn on me. There might be, you know, the extenuating circumstances might be that they are, you know, trying to set fire, which sometimes they'll do. They'll try to get in. They'll try and light something on fire. They'll try and light the house on fire, something like that. You might be able to argue better in court. But knowing what you have as far as good cover within your house, again, solid core doors make much better barriers than hollow core doors do. Okay? All right. Wow, we've gone just over 2 hours tonight, and we could probably go another 2 hours easily with all the tips that we have here. But we are going to collect these, and it's going to take us some time. So please, don't contact our support team and try and wonder where the follow-up to this is. You will have the ability to grab all of the. In fact, I think what we'll do is we'll probably take all of the tips and just put them. Well, actually, I don't want to do that because it'll give first name and last name and people's location. So I won't do that unless we can extract that stuff out of there and you can just have a collection of the tips that are in there. We can do that. But you will have access to this recording on this same page immediately after the event. But I think what we ought to do now is go ahead and give away well, first of all, before we give away the last set, David, I really appreciate it. I know it's you've got a storm brewing out there, and I really appreciate your time that you put in doing this. Listen, everybody, you've got to go check out David's website. He just finished an incredible book on really inexpensive training that you can do for tactical firearms training. It's a great book. I have a copy of it. You definitely want to get a copy of it. It's a must-have, and you can get that at www.tactical-firearms-training-secrets.com. You can go check that out now at his website. And again, David, really appreciate you showing up tonight and sharing some of your some of the tips that we're covering in the book.
My
awesome.
Pleasure.
Cool.
Do you mind if I throw in a couple of things about the book real quick?
No, please do.
Two things for anyone who's a Top Shot fan. One of the first things you'll notice about the book is it's Dustin Ellerman on the cover. Dustin and I became friends, and he liked the book so much that he agreed to demonstrate all the skills throughout the book. So for Top Shot fans, and especially Dustin Ellerman fans, that's a big bonus. The second thing is, one of the key reasons why I wrote this book is because in many parts of the country, there is anticipation of more firearms legislation, more ammo legislation, either making it simply illegal to shoot or pricing people out of the market or pricing people out of being able to shoot. And this book will allow you, regardless of whether shooting for sport is legal or affordable, to train defensive tactics at your home and how to quickly and effectively teach loved ones defensive tactics with a firearm without everyone in your neighborhood knowing, without doing anything that could get you in trouble in a non-permissive environment. So that's it on that. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Yeah, no, there's some really great stuff in there, especially I know a lot of people submitted tips or had questions because you might have a spouse or you're not sure how to train children or things like that. And really, you know, it's up to you whether, you know, you feel it's appropriate for your other family members and who they are and whether they're trained in a firearm or not. But listen, I'm married to somebody who's not a firearms enthusiast and but understands the importance of being able to protect ourselves in our home. And so, you know, a couple of tips on that. Number one is, you know, don't discount that .22 caliber handguns. can be an effective means of defending yourself within your home. I know a lot of people poo-poo it. It's too small of a bullet, blah, blah, blah. Fact is, I've been told by firearms experts that I value their opinion, that there are more people killed with 22 caliber rounds than any other round. I can't say that's true myself, but it came from a very, very reliable source. The fact is that in a home defense situation, even the sound of a gun going off is likely to make a home invader poop his pants. And it might be enough to get them out of the house. And so, you know, 22 caliber firearms can be less intimidating for somebody. There's less kickback. They're more controllable for people with smaller hands, like maybe your spouse. So it doesn't have the kick of maybe a 45 or a 9mm even or anything like that. So it's, you know, when they go to fire it, it's like, oh, this isn't so bad. So if whatever they can handle is a really good option to be able to give them, and a 22 caliber revolver is probably the safest, the simplest thing that they can possibly use for personal defense. So don't discount that's a possibility. The second thing is, in David's book, he talks a lot about airsoft training and how to use it effectively. It's another way that you can really make it available for training, not only inexpensively, but also to a family member, such as a spouse, or if you choose, your children, to be able to use it without the bang going off, without the intimidation factor there, but at least get down where to point it, how to be safe with it, what to do with it, and then use it effectively. So again, this is covered in depth in David's book, and really great material in there, so I can't say enough good things about it, and not just because he's on here, but also just because it's really a damn good book, as is all of his stuff. So definitely recommend getting it. Okay, so by the way, the slip paper that was just handed to me by my assistant is the last set of body armor for this evening, and it goes to Glenn S. from Slidell, Louisiana. So, Glenn, congratulations and thanks for the tip that you submitted. But he gets Glenn gets the last set of ArmorQuick body armor, and let's look at the last tally that we have for the Q&A. We have 320 tips that were submitted in here. Some of them are questions, but I don't care. We're going to count them anyway. So we're just going to round it up to $350 for the Wounded Warrior Project. We're going to send out to them. And really, everybody, just can't say enough about the tips that you submitted here. I'm more prepared because of the tips that you put in here. And I promise you that everybody else who listened to this call learned several things that they did not know. David, would you say that you learned some things tonight that you didn't know before?
Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah,
very good call. Thank you very much for putting this together, Jeff.
Yeah.
And thank you to everybody who submitted.
Yeah, really great stuff. And we have just the number of people that are on tonight just is incredible. So I really appreciate you taking the time to join us live. You will get a copy of the recording and a copy of the tips as well. So thank you so much. And thanks to our winners for their stuff as well. And listen, everybody, really appreciate it. Please check out David's book. Check out the ISCQC. Let's keep the training going. Keep the tips coming in, and I look forward to the next training broadcast that we do. So thanks, everyone. We'll see you soon.